so excited you're along for the rise. Here at Rising, we talk all things manifestation, life purpose, and more. Join me in today's episode as we rise together. And welcome back to Rising. We are live with our first guest episode of the year with Athena Sayaka, who's a productivity and behavior systems coach and a good friend of mine. Athena, excited to have you on Rising today. So I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey. Thank you for having me on. I'm really excited. This is my first guest appearance of the year. So what to say about me? We met in this Akimbo program, which I have been very playfully calling my like nerd week because everyone I met is such a nerd in the way of like just so passionate about what they're passionate about, if that makes sense. Like,
yes.
We all care pretty hard. but I am just working. I work with people to develop systems that make it easier to create habits and that move you towards your goals. And, you know, I infuse my little neuroscience insights, my little pretend stand-up comedy career. It's all in there.
I love it. I think that's how we bonded in Akimbo to begin with, because we were both, I think, one of the few neuro majors in the entire program. And we were like, oh, hey, that's a thing. Even though I feel like we have different angles at like approaching it and executing it as well. But I feel like we're all just such a close community. And that's why I kind of wanted to start off the conversation with like emerging leaders for anyone who's listening and wants to, I don't know, just be in a virtual space where you can connect with people from across the world who are equally as passionate as you are about whatever is in their niche or their line of purpose. That is the place to be, and it's a free program. So Athena and I met there, and some other people on this podcast so far, Teresa was on here as well, and Nathan have all, you know, come from this program. So it's more than just a networking space, but you really meet some lifelong friends, not to be overly cliche, but.
This morning, I woke up to a message from Joe, and he just sent me like a marketing, like an article about marketing. And he was like, this would be so helpful for us, like Instagram people.
I love Joe. Yeah. No, he's great. And like, you see these people constantly hustling on your feed, and it's just very inspiring to be around the energy. So, what would you say was your like biggest takeaway from that week?
I would say, funny enough, that people need to hear my voice. Like whatever it is that I'm trying to do, I need to do it. And Bay was crystallized in meeting you, where we both have the same background of like a neuro major, but the way that you're approaching it is towards mindset, and the way that I'm approaching it is towards like action and structure, mm-hmm. after mindset, if that makes sense. And so I was already feeling that way, where I was like, I have something to say, like there are people who will learn from me just because they don't have the information I do. And then when I met you and we talked a little bit, I was like, whoa. So even though there's a bunch of people in quotes doing the same thing as you, we all are just going to approach it so differently just via our personality.
Totally. Talk to me about how you decided to start What Happens in Between. And then I guess how your perspective regarding your work has changed after Akimbo.
Yeah. So I'll start by saying this. Am I allowed to curse on this podcast?
Go for it.
Okay. I am so tired of marketing. I'm so tired of the bullshit that we're fed. And the reason that I started What Happens in Between, let me first say, What Happens in Between is focused on the sort of long, unsexy, uncomfortable process of entrepreneurship. That space in between starting and whatever you define as success, which in a lot of cases you'll reach one goal and then you'll have a new one anyways. So it's kind of all in between. But so I started that podcast because I was really tired of hearing the same sort of bulleted points, like hearing from experts who, you know, by no means am I saying they're not worth listening to. There's absolutely something to learn there. But I was just really tired of hearing from people who were like, I ate ramen for 2 years, but I just pushed through and now I'm a millionaire. Like, I feel like that's a lot of business and entrepreneurship shows. And I was like, no, stop. Happened in the 2 years while you were eating ramen. How did you get up every single day knowing all you had was crusty peanut butter and ramen? You know what I mean? Like, so that's what the show is. I speak mostly to emerging creators, but also sometimes to experts, like people that I have looked up to for years. But I don't talk to them about any of their accomplishments. I'm only asking about the process. So
that's what the show is about. That's great. And then I guess what's been like your biggest learning experience or like impactful conversation from just having that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I recently spoke with Lisa Nicole Bell, who is this woman that I am very professionally obsessed with. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing I learned from her is just there's so much of life in front of us. And we have to kind of, the way that she phrases it is to like borrow time from your future self. Because if you're driven the way that I'm sure whoever is listening is, you're going to accomplish the things that you set your mind to, but it doesn't have to all happen right now. Like mm-hmm. you can have this goal and know that it'll be there still in 5 years when you have attention, like the attention and bandwidth for it. That was the biggest thing I learned. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
sorry. Also your previous question of how my relationship to my work changed.
Mm-hmm.
I would say before Akimbo, I was a little bit in the space of, I was lacking gratitude, I would say. I think I was kind of like, I'm putting out good work. I'm like trying to do this new thing and I'm not seeing the results that I want to see. And then after Akimbo, I think I realized, one, I myself needed to be reminded of the process. The process mm-hmm. is where the beauty is. And two, that the accolades are not the thing that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to create change. And that's slow and kind of ugly.
It's not cute. Yeah. I think we're all reminding ourselves of that. So we were talking about this on your podcast the other day, mm-hmm. About this idea of like resolutions versus intention setting. And I really liked the perspective that you had on like working towards shorter term goals. So I definitely want you to talk about that with our audience.
Yeah, certainly. I am over yearly goals. I'm done with that. What I've written for myself in my like 2020 planning is I have this list of, I want to say it's 12 things that I want to accomplish. But I'm only focused on 4 of them for this first 3 months, for this like quarter. And so the other 8 things are completely deprioritized. I'm literally not thinking about them. But these 4 things, I have set up my systems and I've created like a weekly routine around each of these 4 things. And that is like where maximum energy is going for 90 days. And the reason that that works for me is because one, 90 days is a very conceivable amount of time, 3 months. It's a season. If you get bored with something, that's long enough to, you know, to push through boredom, but also to be like, okay, it's time to reevaluate if it is. And then another aspect of it is just that, yeah, like we cannot do everything all at the same time. And I feel like there's always this push in January and in the beginnings of February, but then everyone forgets, right? Like there's always this push that's like, you can accomplish all of your goals. You can do X, Y, Z, all this stuff. And it's like, you can, it's not going to happen in January.
Yeah.
It's not going to all happen in January.
Yeah. Or even this year when you're like coming at it with that mindset. So I find it interesting. You're talking about how you've implemented systems for these next 90 days. What do those systems look like? How do you implement them? How do you know they work? Just talk to me about that.
Yeah. So it's definitely my neuroscience major, but it's also years of observing myself and understanding how I work. And something that I'm still trying to get used to is understanding that like I have all these projects from my past that I had previously considered failures, in that I didn't finish them or they didn't end up the way I wanted them to. But I'm trying to shift the way I think about it to think more, this was a building block. So this project, even though it didn't work out, I'm actually taking all the skills that I got from this and all the learnings and applying it to this next thing that may or may not work out as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to show you this. Not that anybody can see, but I have this, like, this is my like quarterly spread on my little journal.
Yeah, just going to interrupt you. This is an audio podcast. So for everyone who's like listening right now, I wish you guys could see this, because I'm actually on a Zoom call with Athena. So I can see her journal right in front of my face right now.
I love color. But basically what I have here is, this is like the macro view, where it's like, I have the goal, I have the routine. I'll just give an example instead of, I'll just be concrete here. One of my goals for the quarter is to write 60,000 words for my book. And so the routine is to write 5,000 words per week. The time that I do this, so this is how I lay it out. It's like, routine is this, time is in the mornings between 8 and 11. And then I have this concept, the minimum viable routine, which is the smallest action you can do towards your habit without straining yourself too much, if that makes sense. So I like to think of it as, it's the plan or the routine for the worst version of yourself. And by worst version, had the worst day, right?
Sure.
And so the minimum viable routine for writing is just a 30-minute timer. And I just write for 30 minutes. And so the whole point of that is, it's supposed to make it impossible for me to not do that minimum viable routine. I can give another example that's maybe a little bit more relatable. Exercise. So my routine, I want to exercise 3 times per week. My minimum viable routine is 10 burpees and 60-second abs, right? That is maximum like 2 minutes of my life. And so even if for some reason on Tuesday I was supposed to work out and I completely forgot, or the day just went crazy, and then I get into bed, I'm not going to get out of bed to do 20 minutes of exercise. No, but I am going to get out of bed. I would be willing to get out of bed to do 10 burpees. I can still give myself the sort of validation of, I'm still making this habit work, still going towards this habit, but I didn't have to strain myself.
Yeah. How does accountability work with that?
Yeah. I have to say, it's, for me, it's just making the minimum viable routine as small as it can be. And mm-hmm. So perhaps, you know, perhaps for someone 10 burpees is like too much, right?
Sure.
So what about 2 push-ups? Do you know what I mean? Truly, the way that I have helped myself through just like stubborn, I literally do not want to do this, like fighting with myself type of thing, is I just make it as small as it needs to be. And that helps, because like, we just need a grace period. Oh, another little trick that I like to use is, if I do have a daily habit and I miss a day, I go by the 2-day rule. So I will never miss it 2 days in a row.
Gotcha.
And that's a nice way of like, here's a grace period. Okay, you missed it one day, but we don't have to spin out. Okay, Athena, we don't have to spin out. That was just one day. Just come right back to it. And we can come back to it with the minimum viable, you know.
So ease into it. Yeah.
It's just, it's not, I think there's too much extremeness in the world. And everything that I'm trying to do with what happens in between, with my own coaching, with my own self, is like grace.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to offer grace.
I love that. So I'm assuming that on the days that you do like skip, are you like using the classical conditioning techniques of implementing a habit? Because I know that's really talked about in the productivity coaching community.
Because here's the thing, is especially with myself, I would have to say I'm my hardest client, because I know all the tricks and I know what I'm going to say to myself when the chips are against me or whatever. And so there's a lot of talk back internally. So punishing myself is like not realistic because I don't know how to really phrase this because I know already kind of this thing of like, why does there, the consequences, maybe this is where it is. I think in second and third order consequences. An example is, let's talk about eating a carrot as opposed to a donut, right? The first order consequence of eating a carrot is it doesn't taste as good as the donut. But the second order might be you get more energy or your sight very indeterminably increases, right? Like the third order is that maybe next time it's easier to eat a carrot as opposed to a donut. And so for me with these, when I mess up, for instance, I'm not looking at the first order consequence of like trying to discipline myself. I'm more so thinking, okay, so if we don't do our exercise, what this really means is it's going to be harder for me to do my handstands tomorrow.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it was interesting because when you gave that example with the carrot and the donut and you're talking about the third order consequences, I almost saw them as the motivators because the way that you were looking at each of like the in this context, you were phrasing them as consequences. I was viewing them as like positive reframes of picking the carrot over the donut. Like those things would motivate me.
I will say that I have the way that I use language is different than the conventional way to use language, but when I say consequences, I have a very neutral connotation with that. I don't mean consequences as a negative. I just mean like things that result. I would also say that it sounds very technical, but it is actually quite intuitive because for instance, I used to be a lot more rigid. So I'd be like, I'm going to work out Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And then if I didn't work out on Tuesday, I'd be like, well, it's over. That's it, you know? But now I still have the idea that I like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday as my schedule. But if I don't feel like working out on Tuesday, I can just do it Wednesday. Do you know what I mean? So when explaining it, it does sound very rigid, but it is actually quite intuitive. And it just goes back to the grace thing.
Yeah, I know you kind of have this like common interrelated mission with spreading grace, but I was looking through your blog earlier. So tell me more about how that falls into play with everything.
The blog actually right now is on hiatus as I write this book. Because I need the blog, the way I think about it is condensed and digestible, and I can't write a book in that way. So I've actually put it on hiatus, and what I'm doing is I'm spending this 3 months writing, and then I can cut it into blog posts for later that I can put out later. But the general gist of that space, because there are some posts on there that people can look at, it's partially helping people to figure out systems. It's big on strengthening your ear to your own intuition. And it's just kind of general help with productivity, but like in an intentional way. It's so silly to me to be really like, say you can do 50 things in a day, and you get really efficient at doing those 50 things. But if not a single one of them is towards your purpose or something you care about, then why bother being that efficient? So all of my work has that kind of energy of productivity in alignment with values, intention.
I actually like have a post I think I talked about this on your podcast, unconscious productivity. Is that what we just talked about 2 days ago? I can't remember. And literally the like definition of what I posted was exactly what you said. It was like working in alignment with intentionality, with like purpose. So can you give us a sneak peek on what this book is about? Is it related to your blog at all?
The book has a different mission every day, literally. I was just writing out this like what is this book about? And I've written three different things this week.
Yeah.
But basically, internal investigation. That is something that I'm trying to bring to the masses, is just an internal investigation where I feel like we are given definitions to a lot of words, like success or happiness, even sometimes fulfillment. And so I just want to first illuminate to people that you probably, the beliefs you have are probably given to you, as opposed to something that you chose or ascertained from your own experience. And then the second aspect of it is kind of, okay, what to do now? Like, here's how to, so I'm going to break up your mind a little.
I love it.
I'm going to help you tell you how to glue the pieces.
I'm already invested.
And then I'm going to tell you, you know, how to move forward after you've, you know, glued the pieces. It's kind of funny because I was also a marketing minor. And so there's always that part of my brain that's saying, okay, how do I make this sexy, basically? And I just keep thinking about it. And this book is not a fun read.
Doesn't have to be.
It's going to do so much for people, but it's not a fun read.
Yeah, no, I mean, as long as it's like representative of your voice, which obviously you're going to do anyways. But I think that's also like, I've had conversations with marketers who have been at firms or who've like gone to schools where marketing is very like, you learn it in a certain manner, you execute it in a certain way. And then if you're someone who comes from the lens of more of like conscious marketing or marketing in alignment with your whatever, you just cannot resonate with those like traditional, and this is what we started off the conversation with, so it's coming full circle anyways. But yeah, that makes sense. And I feel like with what I do, I mean, I've never studied business or marketing. I've never really taken a course in marketing at all. I'm just kind of going with the flow. And I have people ask me like, oh my gosh, your feed is so aesthetically pleasing. Like, how did you do this? And I'm like, I literally use Canva free, not premium. Mm-hmm. I throw on colors. I try out different fonts. I just post stuff. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's all an experiment for me. And this just goes back to the point of like the process being beautiful in itself. Cause like I, the way I see it, it's like the accolades will come, the accomplishments will come, the benchmarks will, you'll meet them eventually, whatever they are to you. But sometimes they come to you when you least expect them, when you're most in aligned with like being in that flow state, whatever that is for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just to touch on this point, like people have this assumption when you see something, when they see your feed, they have this assumption that you are an expert at creating an aesthetic, right?
Yes.
And so much of what I'm trying to do in the podcast, in the book, it's like just pulling back this curtain, being like, we're all adorable little doofuses.
I love that term so much.
I'd love that. But yeah, the difference between the person who's asking you about your feed and you is just experimentation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're learning as we go. I want to ask you, you put me on the spot on your show. So I'm gonna ask you a couple questions. What does success look like to you?
Oh, it changes. Four different versions. One is I'm doing absolutely nothing. I'm like reading and learning languages all day. That's success. Another is creating an impact that I know will outlast me. Or like at least being create, like laying the foundation for other people to like use citation. And I do not know what that one looks like. That one's a feeling. The first one's like a visual thing that I can see.
Sure.
That one is a feeling. I think just I want to be content and I want to have autonomy over my time. And you know, I'm trying to change the world, but like who's not?
So yeah, but like.
No cliche.
Just Gen Z things. It's fine. But what would you say fulfillment looks like to you? Do you think there's an overlap between success and fulfillment, or are they separate to you?
I think fulfillment I think fulfillment for myself has to be an active choice, because I am a very ambitious person and I sometimes forget to celebrate the wins because I'm already moving on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. So fulfillment is, and I achieve this, maybe not daily, but weekly, is sitting and like acknowledging everything that I have. Because once I do, every time I do that, I realize that I am fulfilled in just continuing to be alive right now. You might not be able to tell, but I'm a Black queer woman. So it's kind of a little bit tough I just feel like, you know, I'm inundated with negativity constantly. And mm-hmm. every time I sit down and I just think, wow, it's crazy that I can afford an apartment. It's crazy that I have this cute little dog, that I have a loving roommate who's really good at baking. Like, anytime I just look around and appreciate things, that's fulfillment.
It just goes back to the conversation that we were having about, like, before Akimbo, when there was, like, always that question of, why am I not at a certain place, or what else can I be doing? I was there, like, for months after the pandemic started. It was this constant, like, I need to go back to Europe. I wish I was in Spain, or I wish I was here. And the wish just implies so much lack that I stepped back and I was like, well, I have, and I am grateful for literally a roof over my head and parents who support my career. Go ahead.
It's also important to note that sometimes when I'm making my like list of what I'm grateful for, it's like, it's cheese or grapes. You know,
yeah.
I feel like often when people are talking about gratitude, it's like it is talking about survival things, and then some people can feel guilty that they're not happy for that, but it's like, honestly, gratitude about like candles, like existing in the same dimension as candles.
I was thinking about it yesterday because I was like listening to music and I was just like scrolling through my Instagram feed. And I was like looking at all the work that everyone I follow does. And I'm like, I'm just blessed to be in the presence of like these souls at the same time in this timeline of my reality. And it was just such like a weird, like, yeah, like out of this world moment. So I appreciate that you said that, because sometimes even like expressing gratitude for those like instinctual survival things can get repetitive and then take away the emotion that you feel towards them. No, but I enjoy this conversation. Thank you for being here and rising and kicking off 2021 to a good start and helping people who are listening understand that there's just beauty in the process of creating systems that work for themselves and that will look different for everyone. And it doesn't have to be as like regimented of a process that a lot of talk tells you in this community. So good luck for your book. Everyone listening right now, stay tuned. With Athena's work, I'm going to go ahead and let you drop your socials so people can go and find you and keep up with that. And go for it.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at What Happens In Between, spelled just like the words. And you can also check out my website at athenasayaka.com. That's athenasayaka.com. That's where I live. What Happens In Between, the podcast, is available everywhere you get podcasts. So, you know, right away after you listen to this, click off, go to What Happens In Between. I think that's it. Stay tuned for my book in, I guess, 2022.
Love that. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you, Athena, for being here with us. And then for everyone listening from home, thank you guys for kicking off the new year with me.